5, 4, 3, 2, 1.
It's the new Panic Room Radio Show, brought to you by Hellbound Books Publishing. Experienced publishers of horror, noir, bizarro, and all things dark in paperback, ebook, and audiobook. You can find us at www.hellboundbooks.com. But first, get your feet up and enjoy the show.
good evening, one and all. And yeah, apologies for that. I don't know why the studio audience decided to cheer halfway through the song, but you know, it's a bit of premature cheering there, which has never happened before. You know, it's not often. It must be stress or some such. But there you go. I don't know. Little intros are all pre-recorders. I need to sack the sound engineer and put that together. So, which I will do that first thing in the morning. But it is the new Panic Room, and it is the 18th of April, 2024, 9:30 Central. And you know, and I say it every week. You know, we don't talk as much as we used to. We should. We should talk a little bit more, but I know we're just both incredibly busy. So I'm going to bring the old mate Eckstein on now.
I will say that the show keeps getting later and later every week, or maybe I'm just getting older and older every week.
I think it's us that's getting older. I really do. I think, you know, old age is starting to creep upon us now. Yeah. I was saying before we came on, you know, I mean, in my youth, in my 20s and 30s, you know, I lost count of the number of times, you know, I'd be up partying, up drinking, and what have you, and going on till a number of times I thought I would see the sun come up. You know, now. I'm lucky if I'm waking up to see it go down. You know, I'll tend to sort of head off to bed about 9, and you know, I sit and watch TV in bed and what have you. Sort of getting to 9:30, and I'm like, my eyes are shut. I'm just thinking, I'm forcing. And you always know the next morning, you know, sort of when I woke up, I thought, what was I watching last night? And I cannot remember. I just watched, it took me about a week and a half to watch it, because I can only manage these things are 20-minute increments now. It's on, is it either Netflix or Hulu, one of the two. It's called No One Will Save You. And it's kind of an alien invasion sort of thing. There's either very little or no dialogue in it, but it is fucking brilliant. The soundtrack is brilliant. The young lady, the key person is brilliant. It's so very, very well done. I would recommend it. The other one is, I don't know if I mentioned it last, no, I think I binged it at the weekend, which is Baby Reindeer, which is, again, is the Brit showing you Americans how good TV should be? It is, again, it's a British production. It's about, it's based on a true story, apparently, of a woman who stalks this young man, and it's like 7 episodes, I think. And it is, watch it again. I think it's on Netflix.
Yeah.
Brilliant piece of television. Oh, I binged it over the weekend. I thought, oh, yeah, because I saw a lot of hype, and I thought, yeah, I'll give it a watch, I was looking for something. Watch, 5 minutes into the first one, and I was hooked. And it's one of those where it starts off innocent enough, and I'm not going to spoil it for you. The acting is phenomenal, the writing, everything. Absolutely everything is is awesome. So so much better than the... than the cack that, you know, most American production companies put out these days, I have to say.
Yeah, I can't even recommend anything right now, I don't think. I don't think we've been watching anything that's too amazing or anything. It's not even a new show. It's an old show, In Plain Sight. My husband likes the show, and
I've never heard of it. Never heard of it. What is it?
It's like WITSEC. They're in WITSEC program. They're the marshals and stuff. And the first couple of seasons, I did my best to ignore it with my book. Like I was into my book and stuff. But the last season and this season, I'm like, I don't know what it is, but I can't concentrate on my book when it's on, and it's making me mad because I don't want to like the show.
Oh.
But it's actually getting good.
and speaking of books, this is Jim's book. I need a jingle.
Yeah.
Jim's book review. finally came, and again, I'm binging it.
Oh.
Jeanette McCurdy's book, I'm Glad My Mom Died. Wow.
Yeah.
What?
Yeah.
Her writing style is just as you imagine. You can just imagine you sat having a beer with her. And
I can hear her.
Telling it, you
can hear
her.
It, yes.
And again, because my daughter's of that age, you know, I'm very familiar with Sam and Kat and with Harley, and the other bits and pieces. She was name checks, all these things. She was all these bits and bobs she was in. But a lot of that, Dan Schneider's... Schneider's Bakery production company. There was literally dominated Nickelodeon. And then obviously there was the documentary a couple of weeks ago about that.
I have not seen that, so I'm going to have to see that.
It will break your fucking heart. It really was. And obviously reading what Jeanette was going through, which, I mean, she does touch on the toxic environment in the studio, but a lot of it is her relationship with her mother. After her mother died, and it's one of those. And reading it as a parent specifically, and you can see how abusive the relationship with her mother was.
Very much.
And of course, being a kid, that was the norm. You know, mum wanted what was best. She didn't even want to do acting. Poor girl. I would recommend it to anybody who's ever been a kid, and I would recommend it to anybody who's a parent, because if you want a crash course in how not to raise your kids, that's the book for you.
I really enjoyed it too. It was you who I think I've seen it in the shelves, and I was like, I was a fan of, I was a fan, but my kids as well, they grew up with iCarly, and I used to watch it as well. So when I saw the book, I was like, oh, interesting. But I don't know, there was something that I was like, yeah, I'm just not in the mood or whatever. But I went to like 5 freaking bookstores.
I ordered it on Amazon. It took how long? I mean, it took nearly 4 weeks to come through.
Well, I wanted to order it as well, but it said it was out of stock. So I'm like, well, I'll find it in the, local bookstore.
Oh, wow,
Barnes & Noble's was out. Books A Million said, hang on, we got one on the shelf. And then they went and checked, and then, no, we don't. And Walmart, of all places, I found it. At the last place.
Walmart's amazing. Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah.
So, no, that's great. I'm pleased. Yeah. It is a good one. And funnily enough, because she mentions it, because I'm near the end now, actually, TV show that she made, Netflix, it's actually on Netflix now, and it's a dystopian thing. I can't remember what it's called now. I'm when I finish the book, I think I'm going to give it a watch because it's her in a sort of a semi-grown up. What I didn't realize, she was 21 when they filmed Sam and Cat.
Oh, yeah. I never saw any of that one, so I don't know.
Oh, really. Well, Indy and I used to love Sam and Cat. I mean, I guess, the Sam character, obviously, Jeanette's character, it was brilliant because she was like a bit of an hard knot and a bit of a... But she has some of the best lines and best stuff, you know, but...
I liked Victorious. I think my kids...
Oh, Victorious. Yeah, that was good. We used to watch... Yeah. We literally would get up and get ready for school, Nickelodeon going, because obviously there was SpongeBob and then the stuff. Drake and Josh. But what happened to Drake, again, he's featured heavily in the documentary. It was heartbreaking what that boy went through.
Yeah.
While he was filming the shows, and it's like... kind of spoils it for you. And I used to look, obviously, as a grown-up, you know, my daughter used to live on, I used to love all that.
Yeah, mine too.
They were a big part of, certainly, her growing up. It's like, and I've said it before, it's like me finding out that a lot of my childhood heroes, my pop heroes and what have you, from back in the late 60s and early 70s, were all pedophiles. And a number of them are in jail or have been in jail for kiddie fiddling.
God.
Like, oh my God, what? Yeah, so now and here we have a generation that were involved in this toxic environment in the studio. But stop it, dog spot. What are you barking at? I just make it. We have a cat. Well, we don't have a cat. No, we don't know. There's a cat that walks, a ginger cat that walks down the street. And I'm sure it walks in front of the house just to wind the dogs up. And there are five of them are at the windows in my office just barking away. This cat he's just walking by like, fuck you lot. So anyway, we could chat all night, but people tune out. So what have we got going on the show this evening?
Yeah, I'm excited. We have two horror authors on our show tonight. The first one is one of Hellbound's favorite authors here. We have Sal Kangemi. He's going to murder me for... And I think we went over this last time he was on the show.
Probably.
And I was
probably.
In my head, I was just... I think I'm overthinking it. But then a little while later in our show, we're going to have horror author Richard Barber on. So it's going to be an exciting show.
It better be, seriously. If you want to keep me awake till the end, it's going to have to be a good one because I'm flagging
it
already.
It always is. So I'm going to go ahead and introduce our first guest. We have horror author Sal Kangemi.
Hello. So how badly did she butcher your name there?
She said it right the first time, Kangemi.
That's what I said. That's what I said it was. So that's one point to me. Ha ha. There you go.
When I started this whole journey, I thought about using a pen name, but I just went with my regular name. So
It's a great name. It is. I just can't pronounce it.
Well, it makes for a good icebreaker on shows like this when you have a certain co-host who gets it wrong, so it just adds to the fun, I think.
It sure does, yeah. So how are you doing this evening, Sal?
I'm good. I'm laughing as you guys are talking about, the time and getting older. It's 10:30 here in New York, and I'm thinking, ooh, I have work tomorrow. How much sleep am I getting? Starting to get older. But it's all good, and... happy to be with you guys, man. Always. It's been a while since I've been here, so it's nice to be speaking with you guys.
Yeah, it has been a while.
It has. Time is going so quickly at the moment.
It's scary.
Yeah, it is.
I'm completely convinced that time goes faster these days than it used to go. I'm not even talking about, just the way you perceive it. I think there's something cosmic going on.
I actually read an article about this just the other day. You're doing a bit of research on the internet and something else pops up that catches your eye. And it just happens to be a, an article, some quantum physicist has sort of explained how, because obviously time is an artificial construct anyway, but how our perception alters and how it perceives that quickening of time as you get older. To be honest, it sort of lost me halfway through. It got all a bit technical and a bit, not so much technical, it got a bit forced for me. You know, I think it's just one of those things. Or you could be right. It could be a cosmic quickening of time. But whatever. I mean, there's a basis of a good novel there, actually. But whatever. In fact, one of the simplest explanations I read was it's actually Jeremy Clarkson, who did obviously Top Gear and all the rest of it. Mm-hmm. And he said, obviously, you know, when you're 10, you know, 1 year is, you know, a tenth of your life. Mm-hmm. So that's a lot. It seems like a lot. But when you get to 50, 1 year of your life is just 1/50th. So it's, yeah. And it could just be something as simple as that. Absolutely, yeah.
Yeah, I remember being a kid.
I have to say I like what you were talking about with movies, guys. I have to agree with James. I'm a proud Yankee, but I have to admit, you know, I'm a horror fanatic, of course, and I pretty much watch all foreign horror movies at this point.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Hey, you know, it's funny now because I'm with you. If you think Australian and Italian, Spanish, Korean, obviously. And it's funny now, as soon as I see Blumhouse on a movie, I switch it off because you just know some PG-13 watered down bilge and I just can't bring myself to watch that anymore.
Yep. I have to say you are right about that, but at the same time, they can give you some pretty good jump scares. And you know what? I don't really care how you get me to jump. I'm just excited that I jumped and my heart rate sped up. And so, really, I think we just watched, I think it was a couple weeks ago, it was called Sick, and I believe it was at Blumhouse.
Oh,
and,
I did watch that on your recommendation, and it was awful.
Yeah. No,
it was awful.
I loved I don't know. I thought it was great. I really did. It had an interesting twist, if I can recall.
Well, I don't know. You told me, it's about the pandemic and everything. No, it wasn't. It was a lazy plot instrument to justify murders. That was it. It was terrible.
Well,
don't watch it.
Definitely, but
don't watch
some
it.
Of the jokes. Some of the jokes that had to do with the COVID. That was. I found that kind of funny. I did. And like when the girls are running for her life, and she's like, you know, running from this killer, and she
that was
you
funny.
Know goes up to that lady, and the lady won't. You know, you got to wear your mask. And I'm like, oh my god, that people were like that.
Oh, well,
yeah.
Yes.
So
yeah. That made me chuckle. That was the highlight of the whole film, to be honest.
Oh, so yeah, and everybody don't listen next to Tina. She gives really bad recommendations, but I think I got some good jumps out of that one too. And there were some running scenes really just scare the crap out of me. I'm just like I can feel the bad guy behind me every step of the way when there's running in a movie, and it freaks me right out. So it's like I don't even want to watch that part. Just, you know, let me know when they either plunge the knife into somebody's back or it's all over. Like, it's just, I don't know. My nerves can't take it. So I think we talked about this on the show last week that I'm just, you know, maybe horror is just not, you know, for me. But I do love it. I do. But, man, I'm a chicken shit. So. So what about you, Sal? Do you have any recommendations for us?
Nothing.
Nothing.
Nothing at all. I haven't seen anything good.
You know, that happens sometimes. Yeah.
I'm becoming a tough critic, and you guys know. I mean, as you, I grew up on horror movies. I'm still watch them, and nothing really scares me anymore. I just look to get entertained. But no, I don't think I've seen. I don't think I've seen anything that I would say was good. And God, I don't know how long. I think James and I discussed, you know, back, I don't know how long ago it was, the Hellraiser remake, right?
Yeah.
We talked about that. I was disappointed in that.
Yeah, it was not. Do you know, funny enough, I watched it again recently because I I've got it in my head, but surely it wasn't as disappointing as I remember it, and it was. You know, I think again the bar was set impossibly high with the original, but it was just they just missed the whole for me missed the whole point.
I agree.
Now, for you, Sal, what genre of horror would scare you? You know, if it was a good movie or whatever, but what genre would scare you?
You know, there was a Spanish movie, and I can't remember how long ago it came out, called Terrified. Not to be mistaken with Terrifier, that weird clown movie, but it was actually called Terrified. I don't remember the Spanish name, but the English translation is Terrified, and I thought that was excellent. It scared the hell out.
That just sounds familiar. I've probably seen it.
We could go on and on about books and movies, but we are here to talk about your new novel that just came out, The Kane Consequence.
Yes.
Yeah, reality is unraveling, and it's going to take the world's worst heroes to save the universe. So tell us a little bit about it.
Well, it's a crazy book. It's, you know, when I first started writing it, I think I actually discussed this with you guys. I think I had just finished writing it the last time I spoke with you. I was like, I had gone down this rabbit hole with the whole Mandela effect thing, and I wanted to sort of write a novel that wasn't the Mandela effect, but was kind of, I mean, that's why it's called The Kane Consequence. And, and the funny thing is I was writing it, at the same time, I was writing this long, short story, and the short story was about the world had gotten to a point where people had completely lost the tolerance to coexist with anybody that doesn't think exactly like them. And I don't know why, but I combined the two of them, and I just came up with this idea of this occultist named Barclay Kane, who is presumably, he's figured out a way to twist reality and cross timelines, and he's presumably doing it to see his deceased wife, who was a B-movie actress who died of an overdose, and as a result, the world is kind of subdivided into all these weird lands. So there's porn land, and there's motivational speaker land, and there's corporate land, and of course, it's me poking fun of all these things. And it's just a really hard to categorize, but really fun book. It was really fun writing it.
It sounds really interesting, I have to say, and I am reading it right now, and it is pretty interesting. But I love the whole, take on, like, Mandela effect kind of stuff, because it's funny. Me and my husband will be going somewhere, we'll be watching something, or a song come on the radio, and one of us will be like, man, I don't remember, it seems like it was different, it's something about the words, I don't think it was said that, I don't think that house was there, and it's some funny thing like that, and the other of us will be like, well, in the other universe, it was, like you remember it. I'm like, oh yeah, that's what it is. We do that like all the time, but there are certain times that I'm like, I could swear this was different, and it's like spooky, but at the same time, you're like, I wonder, so, yeah.
That's something that creeps me out, the idea of, like, false memory and things like that.
Yeah.
So, I don't know, I got the idea, and I just came up with these really interesting characters and went with it, and here it is.
Yeah. Oh, yeah, I'm excited. Do you have an excerpt to read to us?
Oh, sure, I'd be happy to.
Yay. It's my favorite part. I can sit back and drink.
So I'm not really good at picking out parts, so I just kind of grab something that's short. So I'll set up the scene, even though it really doesn't mean anything. Our heroes are in this alternate world, and they're staying at a place called the Thursday Inn. And it's called that because in this inn, every day is Thursday. So here we go. The Thursday Inn was undoubtedly haunted. there was no other way to explain all the uncanny things occurring within its walls. As Julia had mentioned, the place had an aura of magic. Over the next 24 hours, Stu learned this was where science gave way to enchantment, where rooms relocated overnight and the clocks struck 13. The guests staying here were an astonishing cast of characters who made Bishop and his monkey appear commonplace. One man living there was called Even Steven, who, like his namesake suggested, always ended up even in anything he did. If he burned a $20 bill, he would find one within minutes. Authorities had banned him from all of Westland's casinos and card games. Not that he ever made a profit. He only ended up even. But he would kill time drinking free whiskey and playing roulette or cards, with the other players having no chance of ever taking his money. He'd lose a hand, win a hand, lose a hand. There was the mousy Mr. Dingle staying in the room next to theirs, who was never seen without his tattered suitcase. Everyone knew the suitcase was empty, but Mr. Dingle pretended it was full of money. He had read a book about the law of attraction, and despite his constant whispering, "This suitcase is full of cash," the bag remained empty. An enormous woman on the floor above them, known as Oedipus Delilah, bounced around the halls, howling day and night. Blessed or cursed with the spell of never aging, she would remain 30 years old forever, but with the dreadful side effect of gaining 20 pounds yearly rather than aging. Whispers among the other guests here asserted she and Bishop were lovers, and, try as he may, since hearing the gossip, Stu could not stop thinking about how such a tall, slim man and an equally short and overweight woman could possibly have a sexual relationship. But human resolve was powerful, particularly where coupling was concerned. Pompey was an elderly man who walked the halls hunched over his metal detector. He was warned about this because he kept ripping up the carpets and floorboards of the hallways in search of the gold the detector assured him was here, only to destroy the floors, occasionally bursting water pipes in the process, but never finding the promised gold. Stu could not wait to leave the Thursday Inn.
I happen to think that Thursday Inn sounds pretty entertaining myself. I think I would go there, but it's definitely messed up. But I would have to spend a couple of nights there just to encounter all of these wacky characters. And I have to say, you do have a talent for writing wacky characters, as I recall from, what was the title of the dumbwaiter?
The Demon of the Dumbwaiter. Is that right?
Yeah.
Is that the All Rider? that was one of my favorite, certainly one of my favorite titles of all time, a favorite of mine.
Yes.
I like the dark humor. I think Sal and I are cut from similar cloth when it comes to dark humor, which is something I can identify. It's nice to know I'm not the only weirdo out there, you know?
Yeah, there's something about seeing the absurdity in life.
I did look it up as well, and it was April of 2021, the last time we had you on the show. That seems like... You know, I know. It seems like a lifetime ago. I don't even know how long. Yeah, we keep talking about how time is speeding up. And, you know, I think I remember just crying not too long ago because we just, you know, it was no longer the most wonderful time of the year. And we're in April already. Holy crap.
You are that person who posts, you know, only... You know, 41 more weekends to Christmas, and I always post, fuck off.
Fuck off.
Just don't.
It's like 36, I think, so, yeah.
Seriously? The C word is banned in this house until December. He's not allowed to mention it. And I'll tell you something. I spent a lot of last weekend... tidying my garage out, finally. Again, funny enough, we've been here 3 years this summer. I finally got around to sort the garage out. And there's the Christmas stuff I had to find, and it sort of offended me to have to deal with it. And I was putting it away because we just, you know, like the tree put back in its box and just dumped everything in. Mm-hmm. So I put everything in its place. I'm finding a place. It's like, this is Christmas stuff. I'm just like, I felt dirty. I felt dirty, cheap.
We used to have our Christmas stuff stored in the garage, and every time I'd walk in the garage, I would see it, and I'd get all excited, but now it's down in the crawl space, and I never get to see it, so I'm not joyful at all.
Good.
Good. But we did, I think we had the jumping spider from Halloween. We had him sitting in the corner of the room for like 6 months, I swear. But he's now put back in the garage, so we won't see him again until October, but he was a lot of fun. Yeah. But yeah, before we know it, it's going to be the holidays again.
Dear God, no.
I know, but it's April.
Moving on.
Okay.
So, Sal, more interestingly, tell us about what you're working on now, mate.
Oh, well, I mean, since we've last spoke, I took a little break and I wrote 4 middle grade novels, one of which was published, and the rest I'm not sure what I'm doing with.
Mm-hmm.
So, yeah, you know, sometimes I come up with these, I shouldn't say I come up with, I believe the ideas come from nowhere. And
yeah,
they just kind of,
I do too.
They just kind of feel like they should be, you know, for younger people, so... I've written 4 middle grade books, and I wrote 1 straight up horror novel that doesn't really have I don't think it has my humor in it. And so I finished those, and I'm working on a new novel now. But yeah, I got Mr. Splendid was my middle grade book, and that was fun to write and fun to publish.
Mm.
Did you prefer writing at middle grade, or I mean? Where does your heart lie?
No, I like it, and you know, I'll tell you, I had a weird experience with the middle grade one that I published, and it's kind of I don't know, maybe I shouldn't say anything, but it was just like I had a lot of fun writing it, and you know, the publisher that published it, D&T, were really, really cool, and that was all great. But afterwards, I have to say, like, you know, we're talking about, you know, the first published one, right? Demon Dumber and a Douchebag. When that came out, I was really overwhelmed with how many people reached out to me to have me on, like, podcasts and YouTube interviews and magazine interviews and people that I reached out to. And I felt, like, a lot of love and stuff. I got to tell you, the middle grade community is very different, and they're very inclusive and... Mm-hmm. It's just, you know, I reached out to like a bunch of people that were looking for middle grade books to review and people to interview, and nobody got back to me. And
oh, wow.
So it kind of soured me. And I spoke to a couple of pretty popular writers that I converse with, and two of them, and they both told me the same thing. They just said, you know, that community is they're very inclusive. So
wow.
I don't know.
You know.
I'm sitting on 4 other middle grade novels that I think are really good. You know, one of them
uh-huh.
I'm absolutely in love with, but I don't know what I'm going to do about that. But I wrote a straight up horror novel for us adults, and so we'll see what happens with that. And I'm working on something else now.
Wow, busy. And I mean, it's funny that you say that. The horror community, as you know, it's just so full of drama. It has been recently. Drama and cliquiness and all that. We as company policy, Hellbound Books stays out of all of that. And we watch from the sidelines with amused grins on our faces. But there's been a couple of times that I'm itching to get involved. When we founded the company, 8-9 years ago now, that was our company mission statement, to stay the fuck out of drama, and we've managed that. But seeing it, it's just like, if these people put the same amount of energy into their work and writing and promoting their work, they might actually achieve something instead of the venom and the toxicity. And it's just awful. And I'm glad we keep out of it. The same old names. It's funny, there's some names popping up now that were there when we started, or before we started. Here we go again. So we just keep our heads down and keep churning out top quality books, and I'm happy with that.
Yeah, definitely.
No, I don't get it. Like, I don't get the I'm not saying this to just be politically correct and stuff. I don't know what's going on with all that stuff. I do see what you're talking about, but like, I have no idea like what the stories are. And I keep my head down. Look, I wake up early before work and I write. I write after work. I write on the weekends and mm-hmm. and I try to do my best to promote my stuff once it's out. And I don't know anything. Yeah. You know, like you guys. You two, I absolutely trust implicitly. That's what means something to me. I was chatting today with Drew from Godless. That's one of the good guys as far as I'm concerned. Mm-hmm. And I just stick with people like that. That's it.
I don't even know what to say anymore about it. But you're right. I mean, if you just keep yourself busy, and which I don't know why you wouldn't, because, we have busy lives. We, both James and I have lives outside of the horror community.
Yes, we do. Don't we just?
So, I mean, when people have time for the drama, I'm like, wow, it must be nice to have that much time.
I wish I had the time for drama, but I barely have time to eat and go to the toilet. There's been times, and I have to stop myself from doing just that, I'll have a slice of toast for lunch or whatever. I could eat this on the top. I'm on the top multitasking. And then it just reminded me just how disgusting that is. Jim. That is just
disgusting.
Awful.
That is pretty disgusting. I think, and I hate to say this, but I think we are close to being out of time for our first segment. But I do have to say before we do let you go that we cannot go another, 3 years or so before we have you back on the show. So you definitely have to come back and see us a lot sooner this time.
Absolutely. And quickly before I go, I think I had told James this, but and it's quick. Right, you guys had me on the first time. Of course, my mom listened, and I remember, a couple of days later when I was speaking to her, I said, "So, Mom, how did I do? Did my jokes all land and everything?" And she said, "Oh, honey, you were great, but that British guy is so funny." I thought that was great.
Oh, boy, I got fun. Aww. I got fun. Oh. Well, if she ever wants to sign copy of one of my books, let me know, and I'd be happy to do that for her. Absolutely.
Oh, thanks for having
me, guys. That's awesome. Thank you, Sal. We can't wait to have you back.
Before Sal goes, obviously The Kane Consequence is available in paperback from Hellbound Books, obviously from Amazon, et cetera, et cetera. And for 1 month, it is the e-book is exclusive to Godless. It is doing rather well, actually. Again, a bit of an experiment for us. It will be available on Kindle and Kindle Unlimited in a month's
Unlimited.
3 weeks time now, so there you go. Go out and buy the book, people.
Yeah,
absolutely.
Thank you, Sal.
Thanks, guys.
Thanks a lot. Speak to you later. Cheers, mate. Bye-bye.
Bye now.
Yeah, I can't believe it's been 3 years. It doesn't seem that long since we published. I remember back and forthing with Sal about the artwork for that book.
The
big pink demon, who is awesome. I'm sure. I think he told me. I think he actually had a stuffed toy made of that, and that's something we need to look into maybe later this year. Is getting a stuffed toy version of our demon. You've seen the.
Was done
by Rob Kabaski, who does practical effects for movies and all the rest of it. And wow, what a, it took some back and forth in again. We roped in Kev Enhart to drop the artwork for him to work from. And hopefully, if business goes well, we'll be able to get you one for Christmas, Xtina. But no problem. It depends how well we go.
You need to take more pictures of him too, though. I need more pictures of him. He was pretty cool.
It's funny. He's at the moment he's in my bedroom, so I figure out where I'm going to have it in my living room, but I'm actually going to get my carpet ripped up and get flooring put down at the end of next month, so that I'll just leave it in my bedroom. Took some pictures to post and posted them without realizing that in the background are my works of the Marquis de Sade. So, apologies.
I bet you nobody even noticed.
Anybody. And it's funny, nobody's battered an eyelid. It's like Jim's got Marquis de Sade's bedroom. We would expect nothing less. So
Exactly.
There you go. we have books in shell all around the house, but there are some that I think would be better off not on general display. But anyway, on that note, we will be right back after these messages.
Panic Room Radio Show is brought to you by Hellbound Books Publishing, purveyors of all manner of dark fiction. You can find the publisher, along with links to all of their available works across platforms, at hellboundbookspublishing.com. In the mood for something steamy to read? Check out erotica author Jennifer Lynn at jenniferlynnerotica.com. You can find James and Extina at their respective websites, jameslongmore.com for James and darkpoetprincess.com for Extina. Don't forget to follow The Panic Room on social media, Facebook unofficial, The Panic Room Radio Show, our Vimeo channel with all of our previous shows, the new Panic Room Radio Show, and come visit our website, www.panicroomradio.com.
Your eyes, times are changing, now the war gets back. Welcome back to part two of The New Panic Room, brought to you by HellboundBooks.com.
And we're back. Are you back, Xtina? Are you there?
I had a lovely
and again, talk about getting old, which is depressing now. We need to have a whole show about getting old, but again, one of life's pleasures, next to a good nap, is having a damn good wee-wee. I think I told you, my last checkup, because I drink a lot of water. A lot of it is habit, really, because when I'm sat working, I whether I've got an oral fixation, well, I chew pens because I don't smoke, and I used to snack a lot, so now I chew pens and drink a lot of water. But my last checkup, and the doctor was, she was so enthusing about my urine. Seriously, it's like the best urine she'd ever seen. It was marvelous and wonderful. It was like, it was clear and it was this and it was this. It was like it was a fine wine. You know, it's like, well,
it's
you
so
can have
cute.
Some more if you're, there's plenty more where that came from, sweetheart. You know, not a problem, but that's me. That's my claim to fame. I have incredibly good wee-wee, so... there you go. Although, to be fair, yeah, we had Indian food last night, so it smells a little bit Indian-y right now, but but it's still wonderful. Maybe she'd like that. Maybe she's just different. It could do different flavors of Jim's wee wee, and you could sell it. You could sell
God,
it, but
so
somebody would buy. That's the scary thing. Somebody would buy it, but anyway, it is my favoritest time of the show.
Now, it's time for another book review.
And it's the lovely Samantha. Or is it?
Yay, can you hear me?
Go.
There she is, yay!
How are you all? Hello? That's not good. Hello?
Sam, I think I hear you.
Can you hear me?
Oh, my
yes.
God. Yeah, I don't know. You know, when I was when the music was on, every so often it would like go silent for a second. So I was like, I don't know, is that me or is that James? So I think James might be calling back in or something. But yeah, it's, you know, I have to say when we had the it's always one thing or another, and that's why we call it the panic room, so that Xtina can, I guess, panic. Yeah,
it makes sense now.
Yeah, it seriously does. It used to be worse, but I've definitely gotten better about it now. But I have to say the intro music we did not have last week, and I missed it, so I was really happy that we
we didn't.
Week,
I forgot.
So. But yay! I'm so, you know, James always talks about this is his favorite part of the week, and it is. What do you have for us this week?
Also, I finished reading the Happy Holidays anthology that you guys put out,
mm-hmm.
And I really liked this one. It was different.
Yeah, different good or different?
No, I mean, it was just like, I mean, it was different good. It's just, I expected it to have, like, the normal holidays. There's holidays in there that I've, like, never heard of from... Japan, like that. The story that takes place in Japan is really, really cool. That one's creative, and it was like a bizarro type story. But you have, like, you know, your Christmas and your Passover, and there's Easter. This one's really good. It's really good. I liked how there was like some of the stories are just like straight up out of Narnia. You don't know if it's otherworldly or if like it's I don't know. You know how some of those stories you read it and it's like, is it another dimension? Are they dreaming?
Mm-hmm.
Is it the weather? Like when they get out of this like weather storm, is it going to go back to normal? I liked how some of the stories had like a religious factor to it, but you know, it threw in like the demons too.
Mm-hmm,
so you would
mm-hmm.
have like your good versus your bad. But I really loved the most that there were just holidays in here that I had never heard of. And it was like a different type of horror. Some of them were really in your face. Some of them just kind of leave you guessing.
Nice. Yeah, we had our show last week. We devoted to the Happy Holidays anthology. And I did think that was really cool. I'm like, we have some really interesting holidays in this anthology. And then the two guests that we had were like, you know, Christmas and Halloween. I was like, shoot. But,
it is a running theme. No, I mean, it is a running theme, but like, the stories are all so good. They're all so different.
Mm-hmm.
I really liked the stories that were just about, you know, the other holidays, especially like Earth Day, because you don't think about those ones.
Right.
Like,
right.
Literally, who thinks about Earth Day? I love that one kind of got thrown in as a, hey, don't forget about me.
Yeah, like, when is that even? I don't even know. Yeah, that's pretty sad. But, I have to say, every time we talk about this anthology, I say something about the artwork, because it is one of the books that I have a little more, you know, out in the front on my bookshelf, because it's so...
all the
cool.
Cover is
I just
awesome.
Love the artwork. I know. Do you have the paperback, right, Sam? Did we get you one of those?
No, I'm reading it on my
Ooh.
Kindle.
Uh-oh, I guess
but the,
down on the job.
But the cover reminds me of, like, the splatter
yes.
anthology you guys did, where, like, the cover is just so in your face, and it deserves that, like, front and center spot on your shelf.
Yep. It's, you know, I could have pulled that one out, too. You're right. So how many stars would you give this anthology?
I gave it a 5-star because there's just a little
awesome.
Bit of something in this for everybody. It was really, really unique.
Awesome. So, again, that was Happy Holidays, put out by the one and only Hellbound Books. So if
Yay.
Anybody is listening, they can...
Oh, there's James.
Pick yourself. Yeah,
I'm
there.
Back. I nodded off for a little bit. I had a little nap there because I'm getting old. I had a wee, I had a nap. So you know, I'm good for another half an hour now. So there you go. As long as my hearing aid batteries don't pack up, we're good.
Oh, gosh, you're not that old. So, thank you so much, Sam, and you have a wonderful Friday and a wonderful weekend, and we can't wait to see. Oh, I think we're going to have next week off, I believe, but the following week after that, we can't wait to see what you have for us next.
Bye-bye,
awesome.
Sam.
Okay, guys.
We
Bye.
Love you.
Bye-bye.
Bye.
Love you guys.
Bye.
Bye.
Oh, bless her. I mean, all credit to Teresa Scott Matthews, who actually came up with the idea for Happy Holidays. Because when she came, she said, well, I want a holiday theme. I thought, oh, more, you know, fucking Christmas-based stories. I'm sick of that. And when she gave me the concept, like we'll do different holidays. My favorite, I've said this before, my favorite, I think they call it White Day, which is a week after Valentine's Day in Japan, where they traditionally throw away all the unwanted Valentine gifts, which I think is brilliant. What a great idea. They should do like Purple Day, a week after Christmas, where you throw away all the shit presents that people gave you.
What's
you know,
like
those from people
like...
you don't like, you know. No, Boxing Day is the day after Christmas. It's more of a British thing. I never understood why it was called Boxing Day, but it was just the day after Christmas.
Yeah. I was, in my mind, I saw, like, actually boxing, so I was like, I don't understand. But now I do. You box up the stuff you don't want and take it back. I get it now.
Yeah, it's
but
the day after Christmas.
Really
I mean...
Time.
Now
yeah.
it's been taken over by all the sales Boxing Day, so it's more of a commercial thing now. But for us, it was just sort of flobbing out. It was more Christmassy than Christmas Day because it was more relaxed.
and you were eating, you ate the leftovers. There was better stuff on the telly, and you play with all your toys and everything and that. So Boxing Day, in many ways, was actually better because it took away all the formalities, like all that stuffiness and having to deal with relatives that you really don't like, which in my case was pretty much all of them. But it was more of a Brit thing,
cheerful.
Which was great. Well, I did. I just hated most of my family, you know. And to be fair, there's not much left of it now, and I don't really like what's left of it. So so there's that. I mean, I like my children, I have to say. I mean, they're all right. But as I tell, I am genetically predisposed to love them, so... That's that's probably the only thing that stops me drowning them in a bucket. But, you know, it works. It works. But anywho. What's going on next?
Next we have, I'm just going to introduce him and we're going to bring him on and it's going to be all like fun. Yeah, our next guest of the evening, we have horror author Richard Barber.
Hello.
Hi, James. Hi, Christina. How are you doing?
We're good, Richard. Where? It's a foreign number. Where are you calling in from?
I'm coming from the homeland. I'm calling in from England at the ungodly hour. So when you're both saying about home, stay up late.
Hey.
I'm here
for half 4 in the morning. It must be what time? Like 4 in the morning? Half past 4 in the morning for you? Wow.
Yeah,
so where? Whereabouts in England? It's a southern accent. Whereabouts are you down south?
Ooh, that's interesting. I'm not southern. It's Midlands. I'm from Nottingham. So right in the middle of it.
Oh, yeah. Wow. Oh, they asked me wrong. Nottingham born and bred?
I'm Nottingham all the way. It's interesting because I worked in London for a few years and they used to get me to say things like mug and cup because they liked the way I said it and thought it was very funny.
Yeah.
So yeah, I think Midlands has that weird accent where everyone thinks it's from somewhere else.
Yeah, you know, I lived in the Midlands. I lived just outside Ashby-de-la-Zouche for a year or two. I lived in England. And it's funny enough, actually, I just binged Peaky Blinders.
Brilliant.
And obviously all the Midland accents, all the Birmingham, took on a bit and all of that was there. I loved it. You know, they did the accents really well. It took me right back. So happy days.
I think Nottingham has a weaker accent, which is why it tends to get overseen and you have other accents.
Yeah, I think
there's not a lot there except duck.
Duck, me duck. All right, me duck. Yeah, and I think it's a bit like Leeds. I mean, Leeds obviously is Yorkshire, but it is very very watered down. I mean, I was at university in Leeds, but a very compared. I went from Doncaster, South Yorkshire to Leeds, and Leeds is sort of more cosmopolitan. It's very, the accent's more watered down, but it still has its little idiosyncrasies, which is nice, but I'm stuck with a Doncaster accent, I'm afraid. this is it for me now.
But it's funny to say, because I was listening to you and trying to work out whereabouts from you know, I could tell it was like not Newcastle, I could tell it was North, but I couldn't tell exactly where. I'm thinking there's all these people from the US going, really? That's an accent? compared to all the different accents they have over there.
You know, people, when I'm here and people say, you know, where are you from? Well, Houston, you know. And they just look at me like, no, you're not. But they all love the accent over here. So, it's good. It's good. Although my daughter's afraid she likes to introduce me to friends and she likes to get me to say coffee. And they just say, they just crack up when I say coffee. Well, what? Why is that funny? I don't understand it. But it tickles them anyway. So
I do remember you talking about Indy's accent, and she can make the word hair into three syllables. I'll never forget you
She is, you know, Texas Southern Belle through and through. I mean, apart from the odd word that she has, but so every now and then she'll come out with that Yorkshire flat where she'll go, I want some cake. You know, that flat, scary spice vowel, but apart from the odd one, she is just Texan. Actually, I'm going to brush my hair. They go, what? Yeah, what are you talking about? And we communicate well, but every now and then I thought, what are you talking about, girl? What? Just speak slowly, speak up, enunciate. I have no fucking idea what you're talking about at all.
Oh gosh, you know, I thought you guys would talk about the weather. That's what, you know, I was here about the Brits when they came
together.
Well,
Xtina, that's just racist. That's racist. Be honest.
Oh, you know, that's what they call me. No, I'm just kidding. But it's been lovely here in Tennessee. So, as a matter of fact, I think it got up to like 80 degrees out today, which to me, that's disgusting. It's just going to get hotter for a couple of months, and I'm not really a fan because I might sweat, or I might like start to sweat. That's even worse, is when you like are about to sweat. So, yeah, it's no fun. But anyway, yeah, Richard, you're here to talk to us today about your book, One of the Dead. Terror doesn't stumble and moan. It walks silently among us, cloaked in the guise of the overlooked. So tell us a little bit about it.
Thank you very much. So One of the Dead is about the main character is Nick Teal, who's cursed with the ability to see the dead. So most of the people around him can't see them. They are basically just seen as homeless or just people that are ignored by everyone else, but he can see them, and he can therefore see that they're sustaining themselves by feeding off the living. But it's not your zombie eating brains kind of thing. So they're just feeding off the living in order to continue and sustain. So over the years, his way of dealing with this is just to completely ignore them and just get on with their own life and pretend he can't see them. But then one day he intervenes when one of the dead goes after a young mother and her daughter, and he just can't cope with that, and he intervenes, and when that happens, he comes to the attention of the dead, and chaos ensues. It's probably the best way to describe it.
So what gave you the idea? Where did you come up with the concept for it?
Well, it was almost like a writing session. I was playing around. I read this session by an author about using senses in your writing. And I thought, I quite fancy just doing that, but like kind of stretching my writing muscles. So I was interested in trying to bring in things other than sights and sounds, so looking at smell and taste. And so that was the opening scene, was basically Nick standing in the middle of, I don't know, James, if you've been to Nottingham, but the Market Square in the middle of Nottingham. So standing in the middle there, and then what I was interested in was bringing in all these different senses that's about the dead before he actually saw them or heard them. So that was the starting point. And then it took me an awful long time to get to the end of this one. I wrote it in about 2 months, 10 years ago, and then kept going, it's not working. So it's taken like 9-10 drafts and a decade to get open for publishing.
So can I just ask you a quick question on that, Richard? Obviously, you know, I mean, it was 10 years ago. So when you've revised it, have you sort of brought it up to date with, have you included COVID and advances in, you know, computer and telephone technology, that sort of thing, or do you just keep it rooted in 10 years ago?
I haven't brought in COVID, and in general, in my writing, I thought when I'm bringing COVID, and sometimes I've kind of touched on it in more recent things, but I haven't with this one, and I think that's okay in terms of how it stands. I think 10 years ago, 2014, so new enough that mobile phones and things were still there and were still part of the tech, so I didn't need to do a major revision. But I have kind of brought it up to date in those sorts of ways.
Mm-hmm. Because COVID is now in the past, you know, I mean, it's part of recent history. So it's sometimes worth a mention, but it just made things difficult. I know there were some books around at the time that was sort of written either just before and as they came, so that they were dated because COVID was happening and the book just didn't mention it, which was,
Yeah, it's
good
old, weird,
good old COVID.
Where actually, COVID's either there or it isn't.
Yeah.
to say there was a recently I was scrolling Facebook and they gave me an ad for a book and I was like, this sounds like a really good book. And then I clicked on it and it took me to Amazon and, you know, it was very prevalent COVID or in the whole, you know, and I was like, oh, I think it's too soon. I think it's just too soon. So I like clicked out of that one and said, well, shit. But yeah, I just wasn't I wasn't ready. Although I get some of the memories that pop up from a couple of years ago, and I'm like, man, that was a pretty messed up time there. So, but it's just a little too soon, I think.
And I can't remember who it was, but there was an author who reissued one of their back novels and just kind of slightly changed the title, and suddenly it was about COVID, and they did it right in the middle of COVID. And it either came across as prescient or overly advantageous. I'll get in trouble for that one now, won't I?
Well, I want to hear more about One of the Dead. You had an excerpt that you were going to read for us?
It's funny you should ask, yes. So this starts very much at the beginning of the book, so within the first scene. And it's basically Nick when he's starting to realise that... because the dead are there and that they're coming towards him. So, chapter one. The stink of the dead man grew stronger as the throng of people pressed about Nick. He heard their breathing, felt the press of their shoulders against his. They blocked his way, slowed him down. The man could be anywhere. Nick skipped backwards, almost tripping over a raised curbstone as he fled. He held both hands out in front of him through sheer instinct and pushed aside a small child in a crimson school uniform. A teenager with a shaved head and a tattoo of a crucifix on her naked shoulder glared at Nick but stepped out of the way to let him pass. For a moment, a gap opened and revealed grey stone slabs on the ground. Just for a second, and then the crowd spilled into the channel like water filling a trough. On the spring breeze, he caught the scent of dead flesh. It triggered images in his mind of rotting skin dripping from broken bones. No amount of perfume could ever hide that stink. Nick stepped into the road to escape the press of the crowd. There was no sign of the man yet. Vomit rose to the back of his throat, and it burned when he swallowed it back down. Nick stopped, hesitated, changed direction, followed the crack of brittle bones. It was the sound of wet skin, slick with melting fat. Nick had heard it 100 times before, and yet it still had the power to drive a quinch to his throat. Nick, Abby shouted at him. He reached out his hands to push her away. She followed me. He was too focused to do anything but note the surprise. All that mattered for now was that one of them was going to be here soon. Sound beat against him. He closed his eyes and took a deep breath, drinking in the stench and the taste and the noise, taking strength from the knowledge that he had been through this before and survived. I need to get away, Nick thought. The rumble of voices was like static from an off-tune radio. Music bled from the open doors of a shoe shop, and it sounded like a woman's scream. The smell caught him in the back of the throat. He gagged and swallowed down the taste of rancid flesh. He wiped the back of his hand across his mouth. One of them was coming, and even though he should be used to it, the terror still overwhelmed him. He staggered to the side of the street and pressed his hands against a stone colonnade as if he was holding up the row of shops. Blank mannequins stared out at him from large display windows. A canopy stretched above him, supported by a line of stone pillars. He could feel blood rushing across the veins in his skull. The cemetery stink blurred his vision. When he rubbed his hands across his eyes and looked again, he saw only the marketplace with people winding between the rows of stalls. They were oblivious to the danger as he ran amongst them, waving his arms to scatter them like pigeons. The dead man stood on the far side of the square.
Oh, you're going to leave us there? Yeah, I was getting into that. That was kind of mean. Yeah. No, I have to say that, yeah, it seems like you do a lot with, like, building this world. Is this going to be a series or is this a standalone?
It is standalone, but every now and then when I write something, I think, oh, I quite fancy going back to that. But I kind of always end up writing something new and fresh. But in my head, I think, watch it, I might have half a story to go back to at some point. But we'll see.
Yeah.
It was a fun one to write, to be fair.
Yeah, I have to say I have other authors that I read that I'm like, you know, this definitely seems like it could be a series. And then I proceed to bug them. And so far I'm not getting anywhere. So we'll have to see. One can
I mean, they're quite like, sorry, I was going to say with horror, the standalone, but then things set in the same world. So you can just pick one up at random and read it rather than feeling like you've got to commit, like in fantasy, to like a six book, 9,000 page effort each time.
So, yeah, what are you working on now?
I'm 60,000 words into a 30,000 word novella, which I feel has got away from me somewhat. So it was literally just going to be a brief novella. I had an idea, again, set in Leicestershire this time. So a small town where statues start appearing around the town. Nobody has any idea what's going on or where they're from or what they can do. And then they come to life. So that's what I'm working on. It, as I said, it's completely got away from me because it should have been finished months ago. And it's just like, oh, no, I've got another 10, 15,000 words to finish this off. So that's that at the moment. And then I've got a couple of novellas that I've written that I'm into the editing stage of. So hopefully they'll, once I finish this first draft, I'll be moving on to those.
You got a lot going on there, and it just makes me need to have a nap. But as we were talking about at the beginning of the show, do you have any recommendations for us as far as movies? Have you seen anything good lately, any good horror movies?
Well, okay, I've got a confession. I don't watch a lot of horror. I read a lot of horror, but I don't watch an awful lot of horror films. So I'm going to go slightly out of genre here. And it's a bit cliche, but I've just been watching the Netflix Ripley with Andrew Scott, which is, I think, is verging on horror, and especially the way he's done it. And that is really, really good. Really enjoying that at the moment.
And, books, do you have any good recommendations for us as far as horror books? What do you like to read?
I read a lot, and quite broadly across the genre. My preferred subgenre is like ghost stories. I love ghost stories.
Yeah.
So I think things like Michelle Pfeiffer and Thin Air and Dark Matter, that's absolutely brilliant. But I tell you, one of my favourite, probably my go-to in terms of is, and again, I'm not doing this just to be British, but Sarah Pinborough, who has written a lot more mainstream thrillery type things. But a few years ago wrote, it's not quite YA, called The Death House, which was one of the most amazing books. And it's not a ghost story, obviously, I haven't said that. But it's one of those amazing books. And what I quite like about it is it just sets up a situation. It doesn't explain everything. It just says, here you go, this is the world you're living in. Just deal with it. And it's just brilliant. And it's one of those ones that every time I want to buy like 20 copies and hand out to everyone. And so that would be my tip for the day.
I do like that you said that, I think that with my introduction into Bizarro is that they just give you this world and no explanations at all. And they don't even draw attention to the crazy things that are happening around you. And the first time I read Bizarro, I was thinking that, did I slip some acid before I started reading this book? What's going on here? It's wonderful because I think that before then I was very much I like to read about things that I can see or something that I can kind of believe, even if it's not even like ghosts or something. I'm like, well, I can wrap my head around that. But when you come to some like big, I don't know, scary pink, elephant or I don't know. This Bizarro was really cool because you just leave anything that you're anything, just leave it and you just have to accept whatever's going on. And so I definitely have to give credit to people who can write that kind of stuff because I just write what I can see. So world building is pretty cool.
And I can't remember if it was Stephen King or Joe Hill said basically if you have something that big, you just put it on the front page and say, there you go, you've got it, and the reader will just accept it because it's so early in the novel that you can get away with it and you just work around it, which I really like as a concept.
Yeah, that is Yeah, definitely. But yeah, I don't even. I'm just trying to think of the you know, I think we were talking about earlier, but as far as recommendations go, I have not been reading or watching a lot of horror, and I guess that's a good question for you. Is there any genre that you have not written that you would like to?
Not that I can think of. I tend to, I'm very unreliable at sticking to a genre, so I tend to wander all over it. I wrote quite a few years ago what I thought was a YA fantasy, but I think the problem is I then entered kind of go back to type, because at one point in this fantasy, you know, 100,000 page fantasy novel, I had like this 6-year-old kid 6 feet down in the ground digging their own grave. And I thought, oh, I think I might have gone a bit far on this one. I tend to just write on spec and whatever comes into my head. Sometimes it's just basically a couple of ideas come together. Sometimes it's a lot like One of the Dead, wanting to try and do something I haven't done before. So that this was a very, I said, it came from what was effectively me noodling in the corner as a writing exercise, and it just kind of blew from there.
Yeah, I definitely think that I remember when I was younger and I was reading YA novels, and I think it used to offend me just a little bit because, you know, I guess how clean a YA novel is. And because when you're that age yourself, you know, people around you, they swear, they curse, they, you know, do all these, you know, they do the same things. It's just, I don't know. And then to have the book be so watered down, and it used to kind of annoy me. And I think that's why I went to, you know, Stephen King and Dean Koontz and John Saul and stuff like that, because they didn't water it down. So, you know, kudos to you to, but, I mean, that is kind of dark, and, but it's good.
Not surprisingly. Right. When I was growing up, YA, and this is going to make me sound really old, YA wasn't really a thing. You just had kids' books and adult books. And from about the age of 14, you'd start sneaking into the adult section of the library and seeing what you could get away with the librarian.
Yep. And they do have a lot of good YA books now. It just always makes me wonder what kind of the line is. Like, how do you go, well, this is, I mean, because there's a lot of books that are, you know, even Stephen King, that have, you know, younger kids as the focal point. So, like, you know, what makes it a YA and what makes it an adult novel? And I guess, you know, of course, you can think about the book It, and I, you know, hear people talk about often the child group sex, and I'm thinking, was it really? I mean, so maybe that's the difference between YA and you know, an adult novel.
Yeah.
But,
I mean, I have had novels and books sent to publishers thinking that, you know, it's straightforward, adult is probably a dangerous connotation in this space, but a book for adults. And they come back and say, oh, you've written a YA. And I'm like, I didn't realise that. And they're talking about, like, tone and also the viewpoint of the novel is what they kind of come back to me and say, it's written from the child's viewpoint rather than, like, a more worldly view. But, yeah, I think it's a bit magical as to what it ends up being.
Yeah, definitely.
I'm a firm believer in, you know, you have an idea, but the story finds its own level. Whether it's going to be a short story, a novella, like you say, you're 60,000 into a 30,000 novella. I mean, I start with a short story, and I'm like, you know, 20,000 words in. I think, well, this is not a short story. So same with, you know, whether it's YA, it's going to be adult, whatever. You know, I think that the story, pretty much, once it takes on its life of its own, it becomes what it wants to be, what it needs to be. And I think we're just mere vessels. I don't think we have a lot of say in it, to be honest.
Yeah. Absolutely.
Great. I hate to do this, but we are just about out of time for our show this evening. We've had so much fun. I hate that, you know, almost every week we're, you know, pressed for time. But you have to promise to come back and see us, Richard.
I will definitely do that if you'll have me.
Yay! Yeah, definitely. Thank you.
Thank you for staying up into the wee hours to join us. I really appreciate that. Hopefully you'll get some sleep.
It's been lovely. Well, I've got work in a few hours. I'm going to have to try and pretend I'm wide awake for the rest of the day.
Oh, dear Lord.
Coffee. Coffee is your friend.
Absolutely. And Red Bull. Have lots of Red Bull. That works for me.
Thank you very much, Richard, and I can't wait to have you back.
Thank you very much.
Okay, Richard. Bye-bye.
Good night.
Bye-bye. Yay, oh, it's great. Always nice to chat to a fellow Brit. That's great, you know.
But yeah.
It's great. It makes me a little bit homesick, but you know, there you go. Anyway, sadly, it is time to say good night, Agustina.
Woo! Good night, Agustina.
Stopped going, the whole world shook, the storm was blowing through you. Waiting for God to stop this and up to your neck. In darkness, everyone around you was corrupted. Say something. There's no dignity in death to sell the world your last breath. You're still fighting over everything you left. Oh, I saw you standing at the gate when Marlon Brando passed away. You had that look. Advertising space.